Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the HO Podcast. My name is Billy Dees, and I'm coming at you today for HO Press, Shorehouse Books, HumorOutcast.com, the place to take a humor break. On the phone with me right now is Brian Kiley. How are you doing, Brian?
Good, good, Billy. How are you?
I'm doing okay. They say sunny California. Is it sunny out there today?
It's not. It actually hasn't been recently, but I kind of like it when it's cloudy and, you know, as long putting off those 105 degree days as they can is good for me.
Wow. You know what? They always say it's a dry heat, but I'll tell you what, it's a dry heat inside my oven too, and it cooks a turkey, right?
Yeah. My Irish bones are not built for this.
I gotcha. Obviously, you're in L.A. now. Now, I know I asked you this before. We talked before when we talked about the astounding misadventures of Rory Collins. But just for the people who are listening to our program today, which is about your book, Maybe Kevin, where are you from originally?
I'm from just outside of Boston, Mass. I'm from not a little town, but I'm from a city called Newton, Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. Cool. Obviously, you're out in L.A. Your full-time job, I guess, as we say, your day job is you are an Emmy Award-winning writer on the Conan O'Brien show.
Yes. I've actually written for Conan. I just had my 25th anniversary.
Wow. That's a long time in that business. I mean, usually you kind of bounce around 25 years. Yeah, 25 years. That's a long time to be working for somebody. That's awesome. Now, obviously, when you have a lot of credits, Comedy Central, I could go on here. In terms of humor writing or writing in general, are there any performers or comedians in particular who inspired you in your early days?
Yes. As a kid, you know, I loved Bob Newhart.
Oh, really? Okay.
I did. And Johnny Carson, okay. Of course. I loved Rodney Dangerfield. You know, it's funny. I loved Woody Allen.
Oh, really?
And you know, I know you're not supposed to say that now. And I love Bill Cosby. And yes, I'm not supposed to say that now. You know, it's like,
well, sure.
You know, it's, you know, my Cosby fandom has declined, I have to admit.
Well, yes, sure.
Yeah, but at the time, you know, as a kid, we didn't know what was going on.
Oh, of course. And you know, so many of my idols, their image, who's to say what happened in some of these situations, but their image for one reason or another has eroded. Michael Jackson is one.
Sure.
And it's just amazing what time does. Speaking of Johnny.
Well, I know you were a big R. Kelly fan, and I'm sure that's.
There's another one. Yeah. Although I got to say, for some reason, the general knowledge about him was out there for a long time.
With some
of these other people, the revelations were to me anyway stunning. But anyway, one of the things that I really liked, to say the least, right? One of the things that I really liked about Johnny Carson was that he could, you know, get somebody from the heartland, and he could get laughs from that person from what they were talking about, but never at their expense.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, he always managed to do it in a way that he had reverence for that person, respect for that person, and it was still funny.
When he would have old ladies on, he would have little kids, and he was always funny and not mean spirited. You know.
Yes, that's very true. When you're writing for other people, such as Conan, how do you test your material when you're writing for somebody else? Because, for example, I could say something that Richard Pryor said, and nobody would laugh at all. Okay, so how do you kind of test that?
Well, that's a good point. That's the different thing about working for Conan as opposed to doing stand-up, where, you know, as a stand-up, you can go out and you can write a joke that you like, and you can try it on Tuesday, and it doesn't quite work. It gets a, you know, a little laugh, but it's not quite there. And then you fix it up, you make another adjustment on Wednesday, and then Thursday, by Friday, you've got a joke that's – we don't have that. You get that one shot.
Right.
And if it doesn't work, it's even sometimes you're like, oh, we should have said it like this, or we should have had the, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's too late.
Yeah.
So what happens is, you know, we'll give Conan the jokes, he'll look them over and he'll say, you know what? I wouldn't say it like this. I'd say it like that. So he puts it in his voice,
Sure.
And then when we have a meeting before the show, we'll have our head writer and our and Andy Richter and our producer and so on. And he'll read the jokes. And, you know, sometimes Andy will make a suggestion. It's like, well, that's how we had it originally.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Or sometimes Andy will be like, well, how about instead of this? How about that? And so, or sometimes Conan will make an adjustment on the fly and say, oh, no, it should be like that, you know, whatever.
Right.
So,
right, sure.
We just kind of give it the best possible shot. But, you know, Conan is basically, he really is the editor of the show.
Yeah, sure.
And he's very good at, hey, you don't need that part here. Let's tighten this up here. And even seeing sketches and so on.
Yeah.
He's very good at kind of getting right to the heart of the matter and making things better.
Yeah. When it comes to writing in general, writing in comedy, do you like sit down and say, okay, I'm going to be funny now and write down some funny things? Or does things just come to you? Maybe you make little notes and then at some point you reconstruct those ideas and put them in some sort of a context?
Well, it really is both, to be honest. I mean, there are times where during the day you see something and certain things happen. Sometimes you're talking to someone and you say something funny in conversation and you're like, oh, that's a joke I could use in my act. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then there are times when you see something and you go, I don't know what the joke is yet, but there's something funny about that area right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I can.
And for me, it tends not to be like it's not a broad area. It's some little thing that you go, there's something funny about this thing. And I'm going to make a note of it, but I don't even know what the joke is.
Right, right.
I just know there's something funny here.
Yeah, this is fertile ground. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I'll sit down with a blank piece of paper and say, okay, for the next half hour, I'm going to write some jokes. And I'll sit and do that. I wish I had time to do that every day for my act, but I definitely will do that. And that I did last night before my show. I was like, oh, I had a half an hour. So I just pulled the car over.
Yeah, really.
Sat in the parking lot and I wrote five jokes and then I went to my show. So, yeah.
That's interesting. I really like hearing about the creative process, you know, with individuals like yourself. Getting to your book, this is your book called Maybe Kevin, which is available now on Amazon. I noticed when we talked about your last book, a lot of times you stray away from the comedy genre. And what I mean by that, there's funny elements, you know, to these stories, but they're not like a book of jokes. This isn't funny. And you get into some interesting territories. How would you categorize Maybe Kevin? If somebody were to ask you, what kind of a book is it? How would you describe it?
It's so tricky. I think it's, I guess it's everything. I guess every story is kind of about relationships and so on.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And so I think that's part of it. I think I'm a little bit obsessed with World War II. And I think, you know, my dad was in World War II and my dad was in the Battle of the Bulge. And,
oh, really? Okay.
And so on and so forth. And I think that stuff, when he would tell me stories and so on, I think that stuff has been in my head for a long time.
Okay.
So I think I incorporated a lot of that stuff in there.
Right. That kind of sparked something I was going to ask you anyway, that the World War II era in general seems to be, even after all these years, seems to be a very popular one. The movies and so on and so forth,
yeah.
Pearl Harbor, all these things. And that era seems to be very captivating. Why do you feel that it's so? Why do you feel that so many people, even in contemporary times, are so obsessed with that time period?
Well, I think it's so – I think it's much more black and white than other eras. And I think that, you know, I think other things are more complicated of, you know, well, why exactly are we in Vietnam? And it's because of the domino theory and because we're fighting communism, but it's also we're trying to stand up to the Soviet Union and China, you know, and so it becomes just more complicated.
Yes.
And World War II is like, nope.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Hitler and you've got, you know, they're trying to take over the world and and they're trying to kill all the Jewish people. And it's like, okay, this is evil right here.
Exactly.
So
sure.
You know, so I think that there's a purity, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Yes.
With that than in other wars and so on.
Exactly.
You know?
Sure. Its purpose didn't need to be explained per se to the human
people.
Yes. You know, this is something that I've noticed, even though we like World War II, and it seems like the Hitler comparisons are, we hear them every day on, online. Somebody you don't like is Hitler. But I don't know that the American public really has an appreciation for the fact that we were lucky in two ways. I for one, am like you. I'm kind of fascinated with that time period. My dad was a World War II veteran. And there's two things. Number one, we were lucky in terms of we had the right people in the right place at the right time making decisions. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now there were big mistakes made, but between Roosevelt, Churchill, Eisenhower and all those people, they made the right choices at the right time. And the second thing is, and this is, I don't know that there's too many historians that would necessarily agree with me on this, disagree with me on this, but I feel that if Hitler would have been just a little bit more sane, the world map might be drawn differently today. If he would have actually listened to his military advisors, that could have been a much more hard-fought war. And
that's true. I think he could have pulled out at Stalingrad and not lost whatever 200,000 men there, and that kind of thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And if he had held out for a little longer, you know, good Lord, Matt, if they had gotten the bomb, really,
just a few, like you say, dominoes of fate, let's call them.
Yes, gone, absolutely.
Yeah. So a lot of times when I hear people complaining about relatively mundane things about our society and all that, I just wonder, you know, if they really know how close to the brink the world came.
Sure.
Just a generation or two ago. It's really that's one of the reasons why I really am fascinated with that time period. Now, speaking of time periods, your book, I've noticed seems to kind of jump back and forth. And my wife actually went through the book as well, and she's really a fan of This Is Us. And she made the comment that, it's kind of goes in the different little time periods. You're back in World War II, then I believe it's the 80s and other areas. I want to ask you, what was your idea behind this, to have these different stories at some point, you know, they're going to converge. And then I guess the other thing I would ask you along those lines is, how do you maintain continuity with that when you're jumping around like that to make sure that you come back, you know, when you go from, let's say, the past to the present, and, you want to make sure that jump, it ties into something that's going to happen down the road in the right way.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you do have to outline everything and make sure that it makes sense. And, you know, I have really three different storylines, and I have to make sure where do I have them converge, and where, you know, it's also that thing of he kind of had some secrets, or he, for lack of a better word. Yeah. And it's like, OK, when do I let out this information?
Yeah.
And you want to have it little dribs and drabs, and because you still want to have surprises.
Yes.
You know,
of course, sure.
So, and you don't want to save it all for the end because people might not get that.
Yeah.
You know, so it was definitely tricky, but also that was kind of the fun part too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds to me like I worked as a disc jockey for many years. And one of the things I always learned was space out the hits. You know, you don't want to play them all in the first 5 minutes.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And so you hit a big one, and then you keep the crowd going as long as you can. Then you hit them with another one. And it sounds like that's kind of how these story elements get sprinkled in.
Absolutely. And it's the same with stand up. Like if you're doing a half hour, you don't want to come out in the first 5 minutes, give them all your best jokes, and then it's downhill from there. Well, I started a song. I don't know what happened. And you definitely – and you want to have that big bang at the end, and you want to – but you want also, you know, you want to sprinkle it out so it's not 27 minutes of boredom, and then finally the last 3 minutes they're laughing.
Yeah,
you know,
sure. Yeah, I get that. I get that.
Yeah.
In the writing process, I'm sure this is true in stand-up. When you're in front of a crowd and you're going with your flow, you got the 1, 2, 3 and hit and your throwbacks and all these other things. And then for whatever reason, maybe it's the way the energy is in the room that particular night or something, some material comes to you, some things that you didn't necessarily plan on, and it just takes life. So as you're writing a book, I guess you could say, you know, talk about some of the twists and turns that a story may have for the reader as a writer. sometimes as these stories are developing and they're maturing, have you noticed a tendency that you're going in a direction that maybe you never thought of?
Absolutely. And I do think different writers, and I know that different writers have different ways of, I remember hearing about this, some Faulkner story, and he had this image at the end that he was shooting for, but he didn't know. That's all he knew. Do you know what I mean? He had like the last scene, and it's like, okay, how do I get to that last scene? You know, and he wrote towards that and got, you know, but I know Fitzgerald, I guess, supposedly would, everything was mapped out before he started writing.
Really?
So different people do it different ways. Not that I'm not comparing myself to them in any way. I'm just saying people have different writing processes, and I definitely would outline everything and have things. But then even within a chapter or within a thing, you go, that kind of took on a little life of its own here. I didn't know I was going to go there.
Right,
whatever,
sure.
You know? And yes. And that's actually kind of the fun part is that sort of adventure of writing.
Yes.
It's like, that thing of, hey, the story took me over here. Like, you think you're writing the story. In some ways, the story's going, no, we're going over here.
Yeah.
Now. This makes more sense. This is more compelling or more interesting or whatever.
Exactly. Sure. That's interesting. I tell you what I've done. I've never written on the level that you have, and certainly not a novel or anything like that. But I have written essays and things of that nature. And I'll tell you, a lot of times I have an opinion about a topic. And in researching it and writing it, my opinion changes, or at least it softens. And, that's an interesting thing. I sometimes wonder if, you know, we're so quick to jump to conclusion these days. If people out there would actually research it a little bit and try to develop it a little bit, their opinion of it might actually change, because that has happened with me.
Well, I give you credit for it, because there are those people that they have their beliefs and they only want to read things that confirm their beliefs.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Sure.
Like they don't want to change their opinion or think something new or grow. You know, they're almost afraid to change in a way, or, you know?
Yes, sure.
So
sure.
I agree. I there's plenty of times when, you know, you go to read a biography of somebody and you think they're a certain way, and then you're like, you know, I remember reading Harry Truman and you heard, it's give him hell, Harry. And he was, and I thought he was going to be kind of a surly guy.
Yeah.
And then reading it, it's like, you know, he couldn't have been nicer to the White House staff and polite to people and so on. And you're like, this guy wasn't this kind of cranky caricature that I had thought he was when I was
exactly.
a kid.
Exactly. Sure.
And I think that happens all the time with it. And sometimes you have somebody that you revere, then you read a biography about them and you're like, that guy was not great after
right.
all.
Exactly. You know? Sure. Now, the book, here again, Maybe Kevin, is available on Amazon. And like you say, it's kind of hard to categorize. It covers different time periods. I would say it certainly is a family story.
Sure.
Yeah, it certainly is a family story. And, you know, I kind of want to entice the audience in that, you know, the things you spoke about, the things you're passionate about, we just talked about, they're all interwoven into your process here in writing this book. It's apparent when you read this book, all these things that you've talked about. So Maybe Kevin is available on Amazon. Now, as far as you go, where can people find more information about you? I know you're Kylie Noodles on Twitter, and you generally tweet out these little witticisms, these little obvious.
So I do. Monday through Friday, I try to put out a little joke. They can, of course, also go to briankylie.com.
Okay.
And, they'll have some videos of you know, my stand-up on Letterman or whatever. And if they're interested in that. And then, I think that's probably the best place to find me. And also tends to say where my upcoming gigs are and that kind of thing.
Okay, great. That's awesome. Kylie Noodles on Twitter. And then it's the website is briankylie.com. Is that correct?
Yeah.
briankylie.com. Okay. I want to thank you very much, Brian, for doing our podcast. It's always kind of educational. If you're a creative type, you can pick up a lot of things from you, and it's always very entertaining talking to you. We talked about a year or so ago, so I was looking forward to talking to you again. And I want
I so appreciate you. You know, you for putting me on your podcast, and I always enjoy talking to you.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Brian. Here again, the book is entitled Maybe Kevin by Brian Kiley. It's available on Amazon. And we want to thank all the folks at humoroutcast.com. You are featured every so often on humoroutcast.com. There's new content posted there pretty much every day. We do, when I say we, myself, Billy Dees, I do a lot of their podcasts, not necessarily all of them, but you can find them when you're on humoroutcast.com. Simply go to the podcast tab, and there you go. Thank you very much, Brian. The book is called Maybe Kevin, and I want to thank you again, Brian, and I want to thank our audience for listening to our podcast today.
Billy, thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Very good. Thank you.
You okay? Bye.